outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, I had people wondering if you still exist, man.
I do.
You, I noticed. I do. You actually came by today.
Yes.
It's been 2 months since I last saw you?
I think so. I have been here, there, and nearly everywhere.
Yeah, and I get word, you know, Brad might be in New York. Really? In New York. And then Brad might be in Mexico. Mexico? Is he going to get back in? Okay. And
I was in Missouri, too.
And you were in Missouri. Yeah. That's where you were going last time I was with you. You were going to Missouri.
Yes.
So welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to have you on the God Journey. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
I'm still Brad Cummings, and I'm back.
Still, you didn't change your name?
I didn't. I'm still here.
Not Brad Gonzalez?
No.
Okay.
But my wife makes a mean guacamole. She's very good at it.
Well, she better hurry, because they say them avocados are going up price-wise.
Oh, serious?
Big time.
That's not good.
Big shortage.
We kind of like them.
You know, all my avocados, I'm giving to you guys. I'm not going to eat them, so Kelly can have them.
You have an avocado tree?
No. I don't even eat them. I don't eat guac. I don't eat that stuff. So.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, no.
I used to be like that.
Yeah, well, good.
I don't know. I've seen the light.
I'm still like that.
that's probably marvelous. That's the Wayne I know.
Probably so, too.
Wayne I know.
I'm not bothered by it.
No. Wow.
So, good stuff. Your son got to New York on his bike?
He bicycled all the way from San Francisco to Manhattan. And I just sat there going like,
I don't know. I don't know why you didn't go with him. I really don't.
I would have died.
You think a dad who cares about his son spending quality time.
I FaceTimed with him. Okay.
I FaceTimed with him.
I was there.
I'm glad you gave up so much.
I prayed. I was there. I was there to send him off, and I was there to receive him. I held the banner that they cycled through. It was very good.
So you saw him off in San Francisco, did a lot of stuff, got on a plane, flew to New York, had a banner when he arrived. And that's your part in his trip.
Yeah, we also supported him some, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. We were there.
I would like to have seen your butt on a bike for, what was it, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I don't want this to be crass, but I just sat there like, how do you sit on one of those little seats for 52 days?
No, I couldn't do it for 5.5 minutes without being sore.
I mean, they're in the saddle riding for like 5-6 hours a day, 100 miles.
Yeah.
And they actually rode over the mountains, like, you know, started here and over the mountains.
Believe me, I've been across
the
U.S.
a few times. They had snow up there.
Car. Yeah.
And then they had flooding in the Midwest. You're just going like, they saw it all. It was a marvelous.
They got done before that really bad heat crashed in on the East Coast, though.
Yeah, and then the power went out. I was glad I was in a New York elevator on that day. We had just flown out the day before the big power outage.
We missed the power outage. Yeah, good for you.
We would have been right there.
Oh, the blessed life. You know?
Yes.
God just navigates you around all
yes,
the potential
he just loves,
disasters.
He's extra fond of me. You know, that's the reality.
Because all of your life is going so wonderful.
You know, yeah. Not a problem in the world.
Oh,
no.
Man.
You know, I do sometimes love the gift of detachment. I don't know that psychologists would agree with that, but I sometimes...
I've not seen it in the literature.
I don't see it as one of... Paul never mentioned it. I know the joy and the secret of contentment, but the gift of detachment, there doesn't seem to be a little letter on that. But I do sometimes, when you can't do something about anything... And you've tried. I do like being able to kind of just like, okay, there's nothing I can do. Punt.
So detachment to you means?
Sometimes you just sort of set the thing aside. You're going like, I can't, I'm not going to obsess over this. I have lost the illusion. Thank you to you.
Whoa.
No, I've lost it.
I'm not sure I want this.
Yeah, I know. You might not.
Hey, but just hold. Let me. Just...
But I'll finish with the thought of, I've lost the illusion that I really have that much control over much anything.
Yeah,
like, especially
good.
In relationships. I can love people.
I'll take that.
I really can love people. And I've gotten pretty good at it. I mean, I'm just going like, wow, I'm loving what God has been doing in me over the last few decades in that department. But that doesn't work for everybody. And there's some relationships that just go absolutely just crazy south and sour, and you just go like, what? I really don't get this. And I realize I'd love to have the ability to control that person.
Oh, you would.
so that at least the illusion of okay, it, okay? You think that somehow, oh, if I could only get them, and it's like, I can't get them to do anything.
Yeah.
And that can be so painful, and I could become so emotionally distraught if I allowed myself to sit in that pan and stay on boil. And I'm just going like, I'm not doing that. So I get out.
Is that emotional as well as intellectual?
I think so. Or there's something wrong with me. I don't know if I've just set some of my emotions on the side and it's like to be processed later. You know, because I don't think it's great to stuff things. Right. It's like I don't feel like I'm emotionally unavailable. I sort of feel like, no, I'm a pretty emotional guy. But when I can't do anything about it, I do like just going like, okay. I mean, we watched the Book of Mormon.
Okay. We're going to talk about it here, seriously?
No, but they do have a funny song like, turn it off.
it's hilarious.
And I just sat there going like, okay, that's terrible. Hilariously funny.
It is hilariously funny. They poke fun at religion. It's not just about Mormonism, man.
No.
We're all in there.
They leave no deities untouched, okay? So, I mean, they threw everything under the bus.
I wouldn't say it's the deity. They threw their fake followers under the bus.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
And
I was shocked.
I'm tired of being under the bus. So I'm just glad somebody else under the bus for a while.
Have you seen the Book of Mormon?
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm not going to admit it on this podcast.
Okay.
Because there are some obscene portions.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Yeah. We don't need the details.
No. I just sat there with my mouth hanging wide open like, what?
You should have seen Sarah look over at me like, I'm going to kill you for grabbing me.
It was weird. There were parts that were just laugh out loud funny. And then there were parts that I really hurt. Because I just sat there. I do know some wonderful Mormon folks. I'm thinking, going like, oh my gosh, if they were here, I felt so bad for, in quotes, them.
Really?
But then I felt like, but they're kind of spraying everything with a machine gun. There's a lot of other people getting shot here.
Yeah, I don't think it's an assault on Mormonism other than the, after you copy the gold tablets, I want you to bury the gold tablets so nobody ever sees them.
That's kind of what he's going for, you know?
That's hilarious. My gosh. Yeah.
We went and saw it because my son, like, I don't know, somewhere halfway through the Midwest, they found the soundtrack of the Book of Mormon.
Yes.
So they rode to it for like a week or so.
Turn it off.
So like he knows, he can sing every single one of them. And it was just absolutely hilarious. But I sat there going like, wow, we just do a terrible job of the real thing in such a way that that's how a group of people can look upon all this and just go like, I didn't disagree with some of their critique. I just sat there going like, yeah, if it's kind of just that empty religious thing.
Yeah.
I get why you would craft this musical. I'm happy you picked on the Mormons as opposed to overtly everyone, but there was so much that was a commentary.
You were happy they picked, is that part of your gift of detachment?
Maybe, I don't know. And I don't know that it's good, but I just sat there going like, I was glad to not be in the direct fire, but I sat there going like, wow, I bet I could probably write an addendum for normal evangelicalism because a lot of that stuff.
I think it's just clear that anybody who comes from any religious background at all realizes how fake it can be, realizes how it can be, you know, just the whole turn it off thing. You're pretending things that are true, that they're not true. Yeah. And I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like the gift of detachment. I'm sitting there going like, okay, is it that like the light switch that they were making fun of in the Book of Mormon? I'm just going like, no, I don't think so. I know you can obsess about things like this insatiable need to be understood. That's not a good thing. I've had that in my life, and I realize, wow, God, I think you've done a work of deliverance because there's a number of situations where I'm just completely not understood. And I'm okay. It's all right. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to change that.
Yeah.
I wish I could, but oh well.
Yeah, I used to say, if you're worried about how people understand you, you're owned by everybody willing to lie about you.
Ooh.
And you are. I mean, that's I don't know that I would call it the gift of detachment. But there are things you go through, and there's a season of God's work in it, and you feel like there is somebody to love that's maybe very difficult to love.
Uh-huh.
And then there's that day you wake up where you just know, I'm not connected to that in the same way I used to be.
Yeah.
And if it's relational, I'm always praying, God, I would love for you to restore that someday.
Totally.
But I don't obsess over it. I mean, I really don't. I've got people that have, thrown me under the bus a few times. And I care about them. If I saw them on the street tomorrow and there was a different something in them, I would love to talk to them.
Uh-huh.
But do I want to chase them down? Do I want to kind of convince them they're wrong? Do I have to tell other people, you know, they're liars and frauds and you ought to believe me and know me and I'm great and good and all that stuff? I really don't. I've never called it a gift of detachment, though. That's an interesting.
No, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a gift. I don't know if it's the right term.
Maybe it's a gift of boundaries, or
it is like the capacity to set a boundary and to choose to be just like, okay, that situation's not good. I wish I could change it. I wish there was something that I felt like I could tangibly do. I can pray for it. I can be open for the day that it one day changes, but for right now, I think I'm going to set it aside. Because I can't do anything about it. And the longer I hold on to it, the more it's going to poison and make me embittered. And I just don't want that.
Either
I just
that or the more weighed down you'll feel. You know, just feel weighted by, like I've got a friend of yours too, actually, who is, God just seems to really be giving them a voice and I don't want to say necessarily ministry, but just a real gift to be with some really young gang banging kids in this area and love up on them. And one of those kids got shot last weekend.
Oh, no.
Murdered. Went back to L.A., old gang area. Kids broke in the house and murdered in the middle of the night because then he was back in town. And yeah, he was here last night, the guy, the friend of mine. We were talking about, you just see that heaviness of not just that kid, but he's loving kids that are on the cusp of that. Some still in, maybe some finding a way out. And he's the linchpin right now. He's the one that's the kind of the doorway, if they want to, for people to get out. And yet the kids are just torn. I mean, there's one set of kids that are being, you know, they got a, here's how sick this is. These are teenage boys who are wanting to learn something to draw them outside of the gang culture. Well, the gang leader who's in his 40s, he doesn't want the kids being part of that.
Right.
So he tells them to go vandalize the place that's hosting their getting together. And they get him on video and everything. And so they get him caught, and then police deal with it, and then he sends them back the next week to do it again, knowing they're going to get caught. And it's like, what's going on here? And that's making them choose. Making them choose between them or him. You or him.
Oh, but that goes on in family systems.
It does. Same thing. Yeah. But to see the weight of all that, and I looked at him last night and I just said, you know what? You got to keep in mind, loving someone doesn't make you responsible for someone.
Hmm.
You can love, you can pour your life out, but we all have choices to make. And some of us, you know, you and I've had a better background, I think, to make better choices. These kids don't have a better background out of which to make better choices. And so in the pressure of their friends and, you know, one person spending a couple of hours a week with them, is that going to turn over what goes on the other six and three quarter
days? Probably not.
It's probably not. But to be there to love, to rescue what you can love is an amazing gift. But if you can't detach from it, if you can't, you know, love what you can love, win what you can win, and walk away when you can't, it will eat you alive.
Yeah.
It just will.
Yeah, and I guess for me, there's a sense of going like, wow, I think I have like shed a little bit of that codependency thing that maintains a connection or an enslavement to the outcome. Like, I've got to, you know, somehow make this come out right. And you're just going like, yeah, but I can't.
Especially when you're getting a lot of that expectations talk from other people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is somebody you really should go the extra mile for.
Oh,
and you go, you know, I've been the extra mile. I've been the extra 10 miles.
I've done extra 40,000 miles. And you just go like, okay, there is a point at which, you know what? This is now kind of my enabling something that shouldn't continue to continue in the name of, I think it's really sort of that false love. It's that obligation thing that is a theory, not so much a wisdom reality.
And it does put you in a place where you continue, and this is where I think people misunderstand love. It just puts me in a place where people can continue to abuse me and I just take it. Instead of saying, no, I'm really done.
Yeah.
I'm really done. Change of heart comes someday. Love to sit down and talk to you. But right now, the way you talk to me, the way you judge me, the way you have all these disappointed expectations, I'm just not going to live there. I mean, I've been to Jesus about it. If there's something true in what you're saying, I want to hear it. I want to see what God's showing me.
Yeah.
But when you beat me with a stick and I say, you know, really, I'm sorry, you can stop now, and you keep beating me with the stick, then really, and I've had this with people that have been fairly close to me, just go, you know, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I don't feel guilty about it. I don't feel like, oh my gosh, you should do more. I've probably already done more than I should have. When I finally say, you know what? That's what I asked you earlier. Is it just intellectual? Because a lot of people can say that intellectually.
Right.
But they can't shut down the emotions. They lay awake at night and they worry, they obsess over. I really, for me, when I feel like I have done what God has asked me to do, and I could be wrong about that. I'm never going, okay, I know I did all God. I'd say, no, I as much as I know.
I'm not sure I ever got that scorecard.
I don't know that I've done everything, but I've done everything I know to do.
Right.
And when I finally say, you know what, God, I'm just going to put this in your hands. I really can't. I don't carry the anxiety. I see him on the street and I don't go like, oh my gosh, it's that horrible. I'll wave, say hi, whatever. But I'm not owned by their perception of me. And that's amazing.
I think there actually is a really healthy part to that when that's the case. I think that was a good question that you explained a little further. I do feel that, I think that's where the gift of detachment language comes up in me, because it sort of feel like, gosh, in the past I'd be emotionally owned by this. Even if I made the mental ascent of establish a boundary, I didn't feel peace about it, because I still felt very much in a codependent way tied and obligated. And now there's a sense of going like, I don't feel that right now. I feel really free and I'm really thankful. And I can actually smile and laugh and enjoy, all the while knowing this still is messed up.
Yeah.
And I wish it wasn't. But until God becomes more dynamically at work.
Yeah.
I can't really change it.
And don't you love it when a third party gets involved who just hears about it?
Not really.
Just hears about there's a problem in this relationship.
And let me help you and solve it.
And not even just help you. Just come to you and say, you know, as a brother in Christ, you guys should really work this out. And I just go.
No, we did. We tried. We remember? We tried.
Yes. I just want to say this. Trust me. Trust me, if you're just hearing about this. I've been down this road for multiple years. So don't say I checked out when it got rough. I didn't check out when it got rough. I checked out when it got rough and people couldn't have an honest conversation about it.
Yeah.
I checked out when people were no longer being kind and compassionate and weren't just wanting, hey, let's talk and see what we can learn here. But they actually want to put you on the rack and stretch you till your every joint breaks. Maybe then, I didn't say it to them. I said it in my head about them. You wouldn't be happy if I executed my firstborn. You really wouldn't. There's nothing I can do to make you happy. And how to let that go, which I find... I've never thought it was a gift. I just find it easy. I just find when I'm done, I'm done.
But I think it's tied to a genuinely functioning conscience that is healthy. Because if God was sort of knocking on, like, hey, you're ignoring something here, you're not going to feel at peace.
Right.
You're going to be disquieted.
Yep.
And when that gnawing thing's at the door... You know, when it's from a condemning voice, it's like, yeah, that's the enemy just trying to just beat you with that stick. When it's the Lord knocking at the door, there's usually a tangible something along with it that I could do, that I'm needing to reconcile my will in agreement with. You know, it's like I've recognized where I could be stubborn, or I just don't want to, and it's like, but when you've done all those things and all of a sudden it's like, well, it's still just really broken and smushed. And
it's unrelenting and their assault on you. That's the thing that says, it's not just the relationship's broken. There's this relenting need to make you know we think you're crap. Excuse me for those of you in the UK. We really need you to know that and know that not only do we know it, we've shared it with our friends. And our friends know that you're that way too. And when that goes down that road, I just like, wow, it's just so freeing to say, I can't change your mind. I can't do enough to earn your approval. And so I've got enough people in my, and I think maybe that's where this comes. I've got enough people in my life that I feel whole about. I feel whole in these relationships. I don't mean they're perfect. Yeah. I don't mean that we don't have disagreements and see things differently, but I've got enough relationships that know how to deal with conflict in a wholesome way that actually gets to some kind of resolution.
Yeah.
And I know people who want to beat that conflict with a stick until it's bloodied, bashed, gone, dried out, maggots have chewed it up, and then, oh my gosh, I'm not sure we have anything left here.
Some fresh heat on that. You know, it is such a blessing to have your family, your nuclear family close. They're the ones that live with you day in and day out. Hmm. They're the ones that are going to be able to actually have, I think, the best appraisal of who you really are, because they see you when you're good, they see you when you're bad, they see you when, you know, just all those. And I think right now for me, there's a sense of we've had some family time that has just been absolutely precious. And it's like, you know, Taylor, this is her last summer before she goes, and then Kelly and I become empty nesters. And
wow, welcome to the club, and, dude, yeah, baby, wow. Woo, fist bump.
I just looked at, my gosh, my kids are treasuring this time. They're not wanting to cram it full of a whole bunch of other. They're saying, I just want to spend some time. And I'm going, like, what an incredible gift. You kind of hope for that. You hope you've raised them in a way that they really have that want to be with you.
Yeah.
But I also know that, you know, you could do everything right and they still, they're just in their season where they're focused on what they're doing. And we've just had some wonderful time of just appreciating and going like, okay, wow, I have no idea how everything else in the world is going on, but this is pretty darn wonderful.
I remember when my daughter went off to college, that last time the four of us sat down for dinner and she was leaving the next day, we were taking her to college and Andy wasn't going with us. And I was thinking, this is the last time probably the four of us are going to sit here like this. And then it happened a whole bunch of times that next summer. And then it happened again. And then when my son goes off to college, I'm thinking, okay, this will never quite be. And then my daughter gets married. I'm still in this will never quite happen again.
Yet, so it happens a bunch.
It just keeps happening. Yeah. I've said goodbye to it any number of times. But yeah, and I had my father-daughter date with Julie last week, which we do
nice.
A couple times a year. And oh, my gosh, just to have 2 hours of my daughter's uninterrupted heart is just so fun. I love it.
And it does give you a sense of perspective that I think is really valuable and necessary of just going like, hey, the folks that know me most, I want their appraisal. I'm gonna put a lot more stock there.
Yeah, if I'm relationally challenged, I will hear it easier.
It will manifest. Yeah. It will be seen. It will not go unnoticed there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like if there's wonderful peace there, there's just, you can rest in some of that. And that's, I don't know. It's been, I was curious. I don't know if you got someplace else you want to go, but.
Hey, we've got all day.
You've been talking about, or at least you were talking to Dave a little bit about that whole dynamic of, you know, kind of sin is our trying to control stuff as opposed to our learning to trust in what the Lord's up to. And I just sat there going like, why is it that we are so prone to try to control? I know it's a fear thing, but when I've looked at a lot of the situations that, you know, are the challenges in my life, I don't know if it was I just pinned in on that little description you had up on the podcast summary thing, but I just sat there going like, wow, that seems to be at the core of so much that's not working well. There is somebody there who is just clutching way too tight in a way that it's bringing about everything they fear.
Yeah, and look at our world. Take it out of Christianity and out of just relationships. I mean, just in the world, the need to control is power, right?
Yeah.
The ability to make somebody do what I think is in even their own best interest to do. I think it is.
Yeah.
And the ability to manipulate people or try to, we confuse that with power. Dave's really wonderful on this. Dave's definition of sin, and I love it, it's always been trying to grab for ourselves that which God has not given to us. And he put every sin in the world in that category. He put, obviously, the first one, Adam and Eve, are sitting there grabbing something that God has not given them. And it's a control thing. And I do think it's primarily motivated out of the fear that I'm not enough, not going to have enough, not secure enough, not. And the more fearful, the most fearful people I know on the planet are the most controlling people I know. Mm. They're not good at controlling. So it's more the illusion of control. Because they really are lousy at trying to make everybody do, because you may get people to do what you want them to do while they're in your presence.
Right.
But when they're outside your presence, they think you're a bit of a creep. They, yes. They just do. And they talk to each other about it. So it's not fun.
The more you exert your power, the less they like you.
Yeah. And so to me, control is I've got to get. And the more fearful I am, the more I want to control, the more I want access, and the more sleepless I am. But when you find that growing dynamic of trust in the Father's love, so that now I know God's not just a rule maker telling me I can't do things I want to do. God actually loves me. And when he calls something sin, he's not doing it because it ticks him off. He's doing it because it hurts you.
Right.
And it hurts people near you. So he's inviting you away from your need to control everything in your life. And love is the only thing I know. To know that you're loved gives you the freedom not to control. Because even if someone's cheating to you, lying about you, be able to walk away and say, all right, God, I'm putting that in your hands.
Yeah.
Because I
on our own, we're not able to do that very well.
No. And I,
you know,
I'm reading Jeremiah these days. And Jeremiah is one smoking mad prophet, man. I tell you, he is. I have laughed.
He's also the weeping prophet.
He is.
Just bouncing between the two?
Well, he's weeping over what's going to happen to Israel or to Judah and Jerusalem. But at the same time, man, he's just being screwed over by his friends. I know we're using a lot of crude language on here today. I am anyway. He really is just getting a bad deal. And the false prophets are really all over his case. He's prophesying, do not listen to the prophets. They're just making up stuff to make you comfortable. And so don't listen to them. And then they go at him full bore. And then he's like, well, God, where are you? Why do you? And it's just that whole, I've never laughed so hard reading Jeremiah as I am this pass through it. I don't know why it strikes me as funny. In one part, he makes this thing about the prophets who speak in vain in the Lord's name and say, thus saith the Lord, and the Lord hadn't said it. And the Lord said, don't, whenever they say, thus saith the Lord, you know I haven't spoken to them, which is brilliant. I was talking about this the other day with somebody, because I had somebody recently in my life pull a God told me not to kind of thing on betrayal, which is almost how it's always authored. God told me not to. And I said, you know what, to me, I was telling this to someone else, I said, to me, when the commandment talks about not taking the Lord's name in vain, I don't think it's about GD this and GD that. And I don't think it's that at all.
It's not just language.
I think that God's name in vain is me using God's name to control you.
Ooh.
Right?
Ooh, yeah.
And how many times have we had that happen?
More than I like.
I've never had any brother or sister in Christ do me wrong that hasn't been told by God to do me wrong.
Yeah. It's like, hey, Lord, could we talk? Because you seem to be empowering a whole lot of people to do things that are not very helpful.
Well, look at what it is, though. You know, it's not, people may be very sincere. And I think people who, particularly they're afraid, if this isn't true, I'm going to feel at risk. And they don't know how to live at risk. They don't know how to navigate life.
That's an interesting way to say that.
Okay. Well, yeah. But so the thing they need is, I need God's endorsement on what I want. And it's very easy to convince yourself that what I want the most and what I think I need the most has to be God's will. God told me this, because if I have this, I feel placid. And if I don't have this, I can't sleep at night. Anxious. I can't do whatever. Yeah. So I think it's just people that don't have, I guess what I keep wanting to kind of get this conversation at some point, I think, and I've different sensitivity to this because of a different number of conversations of late in my life. You and I come from a background, I think, that allows us to make decisions a little more freely.
Yeah.
Than other people who grow up in a constant fight or flight mode. And fear is just they live every day to abate the fears in their life. And they think they can do it. And so it's really a painful psychosis, because God's trying to say, listen, I got you, trust me. But they're so busy pushing the control mechanisms, they don't hear it, see it. And so they're even saying stuff like, God didn't speak to me, I never heard God do anything. I mean, because that's the two extremes, right? God told me to bash you, or God didn't speak to me at all.
But there's an interesting third element, because it's like there's a lot of people that talk about faith, or they talk about, you know, kind of religion and the pursuit of faith as if it's really something, if they just fervently believed enough, as if that's really what God's up to. Like, he's what, like, do you really believe it? Do you really not believe it? I mean, yeah, like, are you fully for me? And I just go like,
I'm sorry, that's 98% belief. It's that 2% keeping you away from this miracle now.
Yeah, and I just go like, wow. Most people do not talk about religion or this relationship with God in the language of trust, that I think has been one of the wonderful things I've got from you, as far as being one to that place of trust. And I sat there going like, wow, that is profoundly different from my striving to believe. And so many people, it's almost like their approach to faith is really that same fear gripping thing. If they could just control enough strength of belief, they'll get their outcome. Yeah. And I'm going like, wow, I don't think it works that way.
No, it does not. I tell you, the first person that helped me understand this was Kevin Smith in Australia.
Okay.
First time I was there, 25 years ago now. And just watching the way he navigated circumstances. And I would just say, why are you doing that? He'd just say, well, it's in Father's hands, isn't it? It's not mine. I'd be going, what the heck are you talking? Didn't God leave us here to make sure the will of God was done? And I certainly know what that is.
But it's not fatalism.
No, it's not fatalism.
And I think that's where a lot of people too quickly react as though, well, you don't do anything. And it's like, no.
Absolutely not.
There's an active engagement, but there is an awareness of, I don't really have control over an awful lot of this. I can try to exert it, but I won't be successful.
Yeah, I think it's a harder effort sometimes not to do something
than
to do the destructive thing you think will save your butt, but it won't. Right. It'll just hurt somebody else. But learning to live in that, not just a theological trust, that's why I go back to this intellectual,
it's not a cerebral thing.
It is that, but it's more than that. It's the ability to go, okay, I'm putting this in his hands. And if he's got something for me to do, he can show me. And if he doesn't have anything for me to do, then I really can't fix this.
Right.
I'm going to leave it in his hands.
There still is the active engagement of asking and listening and waiting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not a do-nothing dynamic.
Nope.
That's why when you said, are you willing to live at risk? And I'm just going like, gosh, in my mind, that's a great way to say it, because I think that's where most of us are too frightened. You know, the word vulnerable is able to be wounded. Who wants that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But without that, I don't think I have the kind of access and intimacy that I can really, at the same time, receive that deposit of trust. If I don't take the shields down,
right,
I can't get the trust in that he's extending and needing into me. Because I'd love to say, oh, I'm doing it. Yeah. But it's like, you know, I've tried to trust. And every time I'm trying to trust, the reality is I'm not trusting.
Well, this is where I think theology absolutely fails you. If trust or faith is just a theological conclusion for you, when the pressure's on, it's not enough to hold on to.
No.
I trust God because
it evaporates.
The Bible tells me so, and I can't. No. It really
all of that's trying to trust.
Yeah, it is.
Which is different than trusting.
If it doesn't come out of a relationship, if it's not, this is a God I know. And if he needs me to do something about
this, tell me.
He will show me. He will knock at my heart. He will discomfort me.
Yes.
If I'm missing something.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
I can take this and say, okay, I'm following you. I'm doing what I know to do, but I'm also letting you work beyond what I can work.
Yeah.
I'm letting you do that.
Yeah.
And there's just a wonderful freedom. And it's a growing one in my life. I don't do this well all the time. My gosh, there are times when my fears kick in and I want to resolve something my way. And times when you just go, you know what? I'd rather do this and be wrong and ask forgiveness later than just not do this, because I'm tired of being misunderstood. I'm tired of being lied about. I'm tired of whatever. But man, when you know that, you know what, this is in God's portfolio. Jesus was misunderstood. He was excluded. He didn't seem to waste a lot of his time trying to explain himself to everybody. Ooh, I want you to like me, and I need you to understand what I'm doing. And yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I've sort of felt like the last 3-4 weeks, it's like I've been responding more to the just willingness to rest. I'm a workhorse. I mean,
this from the man who sends me emails at 5:30 in the morning. Yes. When you wrote them. I don't even see them till like 10.
And I haven't been to bed. It's like I do have a rule that I go to bed before the sun comes up. That's my one rule.
I would say your rule is you answer every email before you go to sleep, but I know you don't, because you do bankruptcy too much.
Yeah, absolutely don't do that. But I answer the important ones.
Man.
Yeah, for all the people that didn't get answers, probably felt terrible.
I answer
right
what
there.
I can until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I
do it until 5 o'clock in the morning. I've really felt like there's a response to God in sort of dethroning that illusion of self, that if I just did just a little bit more, then I can have control over all. And I just have to go like, you know what? I could do a thousand things more. But I don't know that that's going to do any positive value for the kingdom, because I don't really want just what I can do. I want to see God at work in these situations. And I want to be responsive, but driving myself to exhaustion is not one of those, you know, way to go, Brad things, you know?
Well, religion teaches us the opposite, you know?
Particularly, no, I know.
If you get down to praying for healing or something, and you know, God definitely heals every sickness and disease, so I've done these 97 things, but they haven't worked, so I'm looking for a 98th or 99th or 115th, and you never just get to rest in what God is or isn't doing.
Yeah.
That God's purpose unfolds in a way differently, almost every time differently than I want.
Yeah.
I am most certain about God's voice to me when he's asking me to do something I would rather not do.
Yes.
I'm more suspicious when God happens to just tell me something that, oh my gosh,
I'm glad you finally saw it my way.
Yeah, I think the truth sets us free, but at first it disturbs us, because if God wanted me to do what I want to do, he doesn't have to tell me, because I'm going to do it, right?
Yeah, but that's what we call God.
But when God beckons me away from, oh, Wayne, I've got a better way for you than that, and I'm unsettled about, I've got that, I'm going to make a decision. Every time I try and make that decision, and I'm sure it's the right decision, I really want to do it, but every time I actually get ready to pull the trigger, there's something in my heart that just hung up that goes, No. This is not right. I don't know why it's not right. I don't know why. I think God has something else. And to pull back and to wait and to see what else God wants to open up, or what other wisdom he wants to give, or what other insight. I mean, that to me is the way to live, because all my best decisions have been made away from Wayne's wants. Almost all of them.
But I think in the whole, like, you know, the journey of growing into that space is, you really do have to kind of exert yourself and exhaust yourself.
Unfortunately,
to come to the conclusion of going like, well, I guess that isn't just going to solve everything. The people that haven't done that, they don't have the confidence of knowing this great wisdom that I've learned in exhausting myself, going like, well, that didn't work. You do come to a place where it's like, okay, wait a minute, this isn't the fruit of me and all of my effort. And even if it was, I don't want that. That's not the outcome I'm going for. I really do want that kind of engagement with God. And I think I've come to a place where there's a confidence of going like, no, I'm going to respond to God. I don't sit there, you know, on the couch eating bonbons. That's not my problem.
No, mine's chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
But okay.
And I'm sitting there going like, okay, there's actually a greater sort of faith in resting and not doing. It almost asks a greater courage.
Well, when it's not fatalism, like you've said. When it's not that, because we can all just, I give up, I don't care, whatever God does. That's not what we're talking about at all.
No.
We're talking about, you know, okay, God, having done all that I know to do, I'm leaving it now in your hands. And if you have something for me to do, like my friend in New Zealand was to have this back condition his whole life. He prays for healing. Other people are healed. His back's never healed. And He said, you know, I just stopped praying for it. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, I figure if God has something he wants to do, he'll let me know. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life trying to be healed when that's only a small part of who I am. That's 2% of what I am about sure. in the world. I love that kind of thinking.
I think that the ability to live in the unfinished things with peace
yeah,
as opposed to anxiety, that's a nice fruit.
Beautiful fruit.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.